It's Friday, which means it's time for the Political Power Hour on Point Taken, where the left and right go head-to-head on this week's top stories and issues. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride.
We should have just rolled mics. We had it. We had Kristen and I getting into it. Joe Zepecki was doing whatever Joe Zepecki. Right now, Joe Zepecki's mic's not working. Bill's on assignment somewhere in America. Bill, where are you at exactly?
Minneapolis, St. Paul, Twin Cities.
I know that area well. Worked there.
That's weird.
I thought
the left burned that place to the ground.
It's
habitable.
So did I, but it's still here.
All right. I'm gonna just set this up, and then let's let Bill go first because he's on the road, and then Joe. I'm sure Joe. You both have a lot to say. Kristen and I spent a lot of time talking about the lead up to the votes, what happened in Madison this week. So I have a lot of respect for both of you gentlemen, although we fight about stupid things and, you know, we say things sometimes we don't mean.
But we fight nicely.
We do. But I'm going to put this in a very, and you may think it's offensive the way I put this, but beyond the partisan BS, what really happened in Madison this week with the vote? Bill.
I don't think that's an unfair question. The reality is the taxpayers ended up being the biggest losers that this thing did not happen. If you look at any statewide poll, it doesn't matter who conducts it, voters in the state of Wisconsin like bipartisanship. They want both sides to work together to solve big problems. That's what we had this week. We had an opportunity to return $1.8 billion of the state surplus to taxpayers directly and through the school aid formula to increase special education funding, property tax relief, through buying down the 400-year veto. And a lot of lawmakers, and we're going to get to it, I think we're going to spend two segments on this, made a mistake, and they voted no on this. When the thing that's sort of comical to me, Steve, is when you hear a lawmaker or a candidate say, well, wait till next session, we'll do a better job with this. We'll make it more permanent. This is temporary. It's not permanent. Guess what? Next session may look very different by who's in the governor's chair, who's in the lead in the assembly, who's in the lead in the Senate. And no promise like that can be guaranteed. So the best chance of getting those monies returned to, you know, a struggling citizenry of Wisconsin was this bill. And sadly, you know, there were 10 Democrats, I'm going to get to them and say something nice, in the assembly who voted yes. Smart vote, right vote. Sadly, no Democrats in the Senate voted yes, and it's going to hurt a couple of them. I'm going to talk about that when we get to that point as well. But this was a massive missed opportunity. And when you're talking about winners and losers, the losers are Wisconsin taxpayers.
Joe,
there was a bipartisan agreement between three retiring folks who don't have to face voters again. There was also bipartisan opposition to this. There's not a lot that you can get Tom Tiffany and most of the Democrats running for governor to agree on. There were more, you know, or as many Republicans in the state legislature who were questioning this deal as there were people in that room. And so to me, there's two things here. There's the policy and there's the politics. And of course, they overlap and intertwine. But has anybody stopped to step back and go, well, if the opposition to this was bipartisan, isn't it possible that this was just not the right policy? But right, that's one of the possibilities here. And when you talk about returning money to taxpayers, of course, that's a good thing if you can do that. And there were going to be massive swaths of the population that were left out of this, right? If you were a senior on a fixed income, if you didn't make enough money to owe any state income tax, so there was going to be a massive, you know, part of the middle that got $300 or $600. What if you make less than $25,000 a year and you really need that $600? That's who it does the most for. What if you're a senior that it can make a difference on? So all of this is very complicated, and the policy had some holes in it. I would have no problem arguing that this is like a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. And I think people on both sides, the gentleman who made that deal, had a point in terms of what they were trying to pursue. And I think the people who were opposed to it raised a lot of good points. And that's kind of how this is supposed to work. Do I love the fact that, you know, some people were clearly motivated by, well, we'll deal with this next year? No, but that's also politics. And so it was a little bit of a mess. I also think that by a week or two from now, six more things will have happened to frustrate people or make them feel better, or something will happen in Washington. These are the times we live in.
I actually really don't think the average Wisconsinite even knows that this happened this week.
Probably.
Like all of us who care about.
I completely disagree with that.
My husband didn't.
I do too.
He was like, what do you mean? What happened last night?
That's as like saying that people aren't feeling the pain. Then they're not feeling the pain?
No, they're feeling the pain.
They're feeling the pain. I'm saying as far as understanding the nuance of what happened this week, or that even the bill was even proposed. I mean, there's people, I just learned about people who only thought there was two candidates in the Democratic race. Like, I think sometimes we overestimate as far as how in the weeds we are,
yeah,
and how much we think this matters when voters go to the polls. And there's people who listen to this show. There's a lot of people who are tuned in. But will this matter a month from now? I don't know.
Bill, when we look at things that our electeds are supposed to do, it's a rare opportunity when you have the leading Democrat in the state of Wisconsin, who has not been particularly friendly with the Republicans who lead the legislature and have for a long time.
They've reached several grand bargains.
I didn't say absolute. Let me finish the statement. They're not generally best friends. Is that surprising to anybody?
No.
They came together and figured something out. Now, again, don't let perfect be the enemy of good. There's always going to be people left out. It's not going to be a panacea for everything that's ailing every situation. Healthcare, paying the bills, who's got the ability to buy a house. But it was something. And if we are going to sit here, at least me, and say compromise is the C word that we should be getting on board with, this is flies in the face of that, Bill. And I, for the life of me, don't understand why this was not easier to get done. What do you think?
It was an easy vote. And let me compliment my friend Joe Zepecki. He said there won't be a May Marquette poll. He's right. There won't be another one until July. But I'm going to make you a guaranteed statement. Tony Evers' job approval will be higher in July than it was on the April poll. He will get credit for trying to get this thing done, regardless of people understand. But to KB's point, where was Brenda Casillas, the new superintendent of Milwaukee Public Schools? And why do I say that? Where were any superintendents statewide? Let me just quickly give you some numbers from southeastern Wisconsin of what school districts could have had this week. Milwaukee Public Schools could have had $59 million. Kenosha Public Schools, $14 million. Oak Creek Franklin, $4 million. Racine, $15 million. Waukesha, Chris Kapinga, $9 million. OSA, Robin Vining, $5 million. Those are not happening now. They walked away from that. So when these same school districts come back to you in November, or more likely in April of next year for a referendum, say, where the hell were you guys? Why weren't you lobbying for this money?
Hold your thoughts. We'll continue the conversation also in the break. If you haven't looked already, the School Board Association of Wisconsin, very disappointed as well. So a lot to this. We'll get to it. On the Friday edition of Point Taken, Kristen and Steve, Joe and Bill on 620 WTMJ. Good stuff.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen. He's Steve. It's Friday, so Joe Zepecki is here. Bill McCoshin is on the phone. We're talking about what happened this week at the Capitol. My biggest takeaway is, like, I don't know if anyone looked good here, but the thing that I keep harping on is, you know, you come back and you have the accusation is these three guys who were not going to be reelected or who are retiring, who negotiated this deal and ultimately didn't have the votes. Right. Either you can say that's on Devin Lemieux for thinking he had the votes and then obviously not. Or you can say it's on the Evers administration, which I think is a pattern for this administration as far as what involvement they have and heads up they give to Democrats in the legislature. And so I think that, I mean, Bill, you might be right again as far as what this is going to do to Evers' approval rating. But I also think it's worth noting that this is also a leadership problem as far as him giving more of a heads up to people before, like, they find out with the general public of what this deal is going to be.
It's unusual that a governor would propose this and not have the votes to get it done. I'll agree with that. I worked, for the listeners who don't know, I worked for Governor Tommy Thompson for 10 years. I helped organize these votes for him. I helped kill veto overrides when necessary. That part's unusual. There's no question about that. I don't know that Devin Lemahue, the Senate Majority Leader, ever had 17 votes for this, but I'm going to be honest, and I think hopefully the listeners, you know, continually give me credit for this, but I think the three Senate Republicans who voted no made a gigantic political mistake. If for no other reason, by the way, they want to say they're principled. Yeah, come on. This was a political vote as much as anything. Voters are hurting back home. But for them, for those three, two of whom are not running for reelection, Rob Hutton and Steve Noss, the vote was yes to help their partner, Howard Markline, who is the most vulnerable incumbent running again. It was the easiest vote to give their friend Howard, who's done immense favors for them, both of them, over the course of their career. The one who is running, Rob Hutton, the same thing. I mean, I just gave you Waukesha's
number. No, Hutton's
number,
not
what
running.
They walked away from.
You mean Kapanga?
Kapanga.
Yeah, sorry, because Hutton's not running.
He walked away from $9 million. Right? For Waukesha. I think all three of them made a gigantic mistake politically, and they put Howard Markline in the crosshairs by doing that.
Bill, what role did Tom Tiffany, Congressman Tom Tiffany, candidate Tom Tiffany play in this, do you think?
I think this would have shook out the way it did no matter what he said. I understand why he said what he said. I wouldn't have done it. If I were advising him, I would have said, say yes to the money, but it's not enough. Talk about the 400-year veto. By the way, I still think that's his strongest issue in the general election, and nothing in this deal changed that. The 400-year veto did not go away in this package, so he could have easily said, while this isn't enough, I'll give you more, and my first action on day one as governor is I'll eliminate the 400-year veto, and we'll start from there. That would have been a better strategy, in my opinion. If you are running a campaign on affordability, then speak to affordability. Don't tell me you're going to write me a check later. I need the money now.
It is interesting, Jill, that, you know, affordability is the talking points of not just Democrats, a lot of people, because everyone's feeling the pain,
yeah.
Right? We're constantly reminded about that. We talk about it on this show, and I'm certain that you talk about it in your daily work life. But on this one, I could read you the quote from the Wisconsin School Board Association. They have some serious challenges coming, and to say you're putting it off doesn't help the individual, doesn't help the organizations, doesn't help school districts, doesn't help a lot of people.
So my question is with this. So we've been talking a lot about the governor's race on the Democratic side. How does, you know, when is someone going to break out? How are they going to differentiate themselves? To me, this seems like an opportunity to differentiate yourself.
Missy Hughes is trying.
I was going to say, who do you feel like has, in this scenario, put a stake in the ground as far as where they stand, and do you think it makes a difference?
There's no doubt that it's Missy Hughes, and she's giving it a go. She has to especially try to grab some space from Joel Brennan in sort of that moderate pro-business lane, and I think, you know, you always benefit in terms of getting attention and, you know, getting people paying attention to you when you are different from where everybody else is. And so of the seven real candidates, you know, we had two of them who were sort of in the middle, right? Rodriguez and Barnes.
Mm-hmm.
You had most of them.
And Crowley.
Yeah, sort of the same. You had three who were like sort of, you know, definitively against. And then Missy Hughes is the only one who is definitively for. I would like all of our gubernatorial candidates to take a lesson from this week. And this is about more than just becoming the nominee and winning a general election. It is, how are you going to set up your governorship and make sure that everybody's on the same page and you don't run into problems like this? Because there's just no way to say anything other than Tony Evers didn't get the politics right with the Democratic caucuses.
You both seem to think this is not going to be a bigger issue than what it is this week.
I think it's going to be a very big issue. I'm talking
about Kristen and Joe. I have a feeling this is going to be something that voters are going to be thinking about when Democrats have to winnow it down. I think they're going to actually remember this, and I'm not going to stop talking about it. And I'll have some love for Missy Hughes later, because, damn, that was leadership. What she did, which was not easy, by the way.
No.
I mean, maybe it is because she's not one of the top candidates right now. And I'll say some strong words about what I think voters should do with that leadership later. But
I think all of these folks should be who they are, right? And like Kelda Royce was who Kelda Royce is in her immediate opposition to this. And Democrats in the legislature have a point when they say the school funding formula has been jacked for years. For 15 years, we've been using, you know, duct tape and scotch tape and bailing wire to keep this thing together. And it's been really, really difficult. There is something fundamentally broken. And this would not have changed that.
All right. Joseph Pecky, Bill McCosh, and Kristen and Steve on a very, very lively edition of Point Taken on this Friday. Stay tuned. Lots more to get to after this. About a 45 seconds slot here to give Bill McCosh his final thoughts on our budgets, or should say tax bill, week that was. Bill.
I'm going to combine a couple thoughts. If I agree with Joe, Missy Hughes stood out this week. I would have her in seventh place out of seven candidates right now. So if I'm her, if you agree with Bill McCosh, my prediction on Tony Evers, that his numbers will be up in July, I would write ads today that ties me to Tony Evers because he is the most popular statewide Democrat in Wisconsin other than Barack Obama in the last 20 years.
Not if you ask other Democratic candidates, they could care less about Tony Evers. All right, we've got to take a break here for news. We have, of course, our local news update. We're going to talk about China. Did I do a good China? How's the president?
No, I don't think you're doing it. I don't think you're getting it right.
I could never do a good Trump impersonation because it's just too dumb. Anyway, so we got China, that big trip that just wrapped up, including some comments the president made on the way home. Wowza. I'll see if I can weave that into conversation. Before we get to any or all of that with Joe and Bill and Kristen and Steve.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry. He is Steve Scafidi here with Joe Zepecki in studio. Bill McCosh is on assignment. And this week, as of officially now, President Donald Trump has left Beijing after his two-day summit with the Chinese leader Xi Jinping. And a lot of different problems were settled, apparently. This is according to Trump, but substantive agreements have yet to be announced on key issues. And so what...
It was a summit about nothing.
I was going to say, as far as they talked,
they didn't even talk about tariffs. He put 17 of the leading CEOs in America on Air Force One to fly all the way over there. And Xi didn't even do him the respect of meeting him at the airport. Remember, folks, when Putin flew to the U.S. in Alaska, there was Trump rolling out the red carpet, greeting him coming off the plane. And Xi did not do that for Trump, which is a real diplomatic slap in the face. And the idea behind these summits is usually there's months and months of work beforehand, and then you go have the summit and you announce the big deal. There was no big deal announced here. He said they didn't talk about tariffs. There's no commitment from China to help with the Strait of Hormuz. So this was a summit about nothing.
Bill?
My favorite saying in politics is there are no mysteries, only facts you do not have. And I think that's the situation we're in as the president flies back from Beijing. The only thing that was announced or has been announced or leaked anyway is China agreed to buy 200 Boeing airplanes. That's it. I can't imagine that they would have taken that delegation, had all of this hype behind this to get just that. So I'm confident there's more coming. I'm not 100% sure why more hasn't been announced before they left, but there's no chance that they would have gone there for, you know, dinner and to sleep in a hotel. There's got to be more coming.
I wish my friend was more credulous. Like, we know Donald Trump by now. We've been at this for 11 years. He likes the pomp and circumstance. He likes to be able to say he talked to the leading strongmen around the world and that he's buddy-buddy with them. I'm a little surprised you don't think it's possible that's all that comes out of this.
I just think that there, to your point, which was correct, there were months and months and months of effort that went into this before they left. Remember, this was actually scheduled for 6 weeks ago, and it got delayed because of the Iran situation. So I think there's more coming on this. This is not usually how Trump handles things, that he likes the announcements instantly, so I'm a little surprised by that, but I'm cautiously optimistic we'll hear more in the next few days.
So I have to ask this because, and it might be opening a bigger conversation that we don't have time for, but Trump on Truth Social, and it was unclear if this was a public or private remark, but on Truth Social, Trump said that Xi referred to the U.S. as perhaps being a declining nation. And Trump's been that, tried to make that sound like it was when the Biden years, right? Do you feel like we're a declining nation right now?
I think our standing relative to China is not as strong as it was 2, 5, 10 years ago. This week on Capitol Hill, Doug Burgum went and testified, and it was pointed out that last year the United States added 53 gigawatts to our power grid. China added 534. They're 10xing us on building stuff. That's a problem. When you look at what this administration has meant for international relationships with our traditional allies, and you look at what China is doing through the Silk and Road Initiative, while we are closing USAID, our standing relative to them is not as far ahead as it used to be. And for Xi to apparently open, and again, this is internet stuff, we don't know, but the fact that Trump talked about it probably means some version of it happened. But apparently what Xi opened with or quickly started with was something called the Thucydides trap, which is how do competing nations whose relative standing is changing avoid armed conflict? Because throughout history, that is typically what happens. And that was viewed by a lot of observers as Xi calling the United States a declining nation. And for Trump to immediately go to like, oh, that's all Joe Biden's fault. It's like, bro, at this point, you've been president for more of the last 10 years than Joe Biden was. At some point, you got to own what is happening or not happening. And among the things that is not happening is we're not building enough stuff. We're not resuming manufacturing fast enough. We hear all these, oh, there's $17 gajillion in investment. Well, where the hell is it, man?
Our kids are behind as far as where they were 10 years ago.
That's my biggest concern. I'm as red, white, and blue as you can get. I do not think we're a nation in decline. However, I think we face a serious problem in our public education system, which was confirmed this week when it's a new report released showed that, you know, education in the U.S. over the last 10 years has seriously declined. It wasn't just COVID. The decline started before COVID, which accelerated all this. If we do not address that, we're going to be a nation in decline.
Bill McCosh and Joseph Pecky, Kristen and Steven this Friday. If you have a thought or a comment, feedback, 855-616-1620. Siding Unlimited, WTMJ Talk and Text Line. Lots more to come. We'll do it after this. You know, the things that we choose to talk about, there's always a long list, and Kristen and I do our best to winnow it down. But, you know, we talked about China because that's where the president was most recently. Is he back or is he on his way back?
On his way, I believe.
All right. So while I quickly look up, and I'm going to ask you, this is what the president said to the New York Times' David Sanger. Guy's been covering politics, Washington, D.C. for a long time. Talking about Iran. Direct quote. I had a total military victory, but the fake news, guys like you, write incorrectly. You're a fake guy. We had a total military victory. I actually think it's sort of treasonous what you write. You should be ashamed of yourself. I actually think it's treason. So you got two treasons in there. In response to a simple question, basically, about, you know, the war status. Bill, your thoughts about the president's response, but where we're at in this, although it's only been, what, 3 months only? Billions of dollars, lost lives, many injured.
70 days, something like that.
Yeah. Where this seemingly no plan to get out of Iran or resolve
and no
this.
Troops on the ground, which Bill called for last week.
All right, so where are we at?
I think he's still there. Bill, are you still feeling like we need troops on the ground and just to bomb them?
I am, yeah. So I would say you can't say there's a total military victory until the Straits of Hormuz are open, and I mean fully open. Iran announced today that they're going to let vessels get through who aren't U.S. flagged or part of the war against them. We can block all of that. That's all great, but it means 469 gas is here for a long time. And that is politically dynamite for Republicans. I know the president and the White House understand that. So the longer this goes, the closer it gets to November 3rd. I mean, there's 172 days until the November election. People are feeling this. I mean, it's $2 a gallon more than we were all paying in January. And I don't know how you claim total victory when that's the case. So, and we didn't achieve the objective of completely denuclearizing these guys. We got to go in and get the enriched uranium. So there's still pieces to go, but, man, if they don't get some progress on these negotiations, which I'm very skeptical of, I think they got to resume the bombing. I said it last week, and we do not have a complete military victory, and Americans are struggling as a result of that.
All right, I'm going to get Joe's response, and I'll respect his time, but I also want to get an answer from both of you on, I can't seem to get traction on people attacking journalists, calling their questions treasonous.
It's disgusting.
All right, but let's get to your response on the other thing first.
And it's totally out of touch with reality. Donald Trump, when he says total military victory, is disagreeing with his own government. Pretty incredible reporting from the New York Times earlier this week. U.S. intelligence shows Iran retains substantial missile capabilities, including operational access to 30 of the 33 missile sites along the Strait of Hormuz. Donald Trump is totally disconnected from reality. He's trying to make you believe something that is not true, which is that ball game, we win, all done here. We've achieved nothing. This is becoming a serious problem, not just for the price of gas and Americans' wallets, but on the global stage. Like, he's out to lunch and has no idea what's going on.
Well, Bill, because we've talked about it at least on texting this week, but the not even a little bit, I don't think about Americans' financial situation at all. All he cares about as far as is Iran not getting a nuke. Do you believe him on face value that is what he, because over Easter he was talking about open the effing strait. So as far as, what do you think his actual motivation and end goal is as far as the goalposts seeming to move?
I think he wants to denuclearize them for sure. And I think that statement can be read a couple different ways. It's from a political standpoint, it's not good. I mean, I said that to you guys on the text, but it's a disconnect with reality, what people are facing. When you're paying, if you have a 20-gallon gas tank like I do, $2 per gallon, that's an extra $40 every time. I can afford it, but not a lot of people can. So that's, I think what he was saying is a message to Iran, which is, don't think time is my enemy. I'm in this to win this. And for him, he can do that because he can't run again. But for Republicans, that does not work. This has to get resolved sooner than later, and gas prices have to recede.
Bill, I mentioned at the beginning, the thought that if a person asks a question, a credentialed journalist on Air Force One, and you call their behavior treasonous, what do you think about that?
I don't like it. I think you can disagree with a question. I think you can challenge a reporter. I don't think you have to go to that level. I mean, I think he's a little defensive on this because he understands that economically this has been challenging for Americans.
Bill McCosh, Joseph Pecky, Steve, and Kristen will take a break here. Final break of the first 60 minutes of Point Taken on this Friday. 10:53 on 620 WTMJ. I am Steve. She is Kristen. Joe Zepecki, Democratic strategist. Bill McCosh on the other side of the aisle, Republican, conservative, and on assignments in the Twin Cities of Minnesota. All right, start with you, Bill. I sort of got into it a little bit. I just had a texter ask me about this. I think the reason I ask these questions is I think real journalism matters. From your position as a Republican strategist, are you concerned about the state of information in this country? Because this is why I'm so passionate about it. I'm not a journalist, but I'm not seeing journalists stand up for themselves. I'm not seeing enough people to do what I do, stand up for this issue, including attack on women. You're a man, I'm a man, but I don't like what I'm seeing. What do you think?
Journalists have a role in America from our founding days, 250 years ago, to hold elected leaders and even government bureaucrats to account. I'm totally for that. I don't think that should change. Doesn't mean they can't be challenged. Doesn't mean they're not going to get it wrong from time to time. And if you're a smart politician, you can correct them instantly. I mean, there is such a thing called rapid response. So I'm for good reporters that ask tough questions. I'm for politicians that can actually handle the fastballs.
Joe, you've been around politics a long time.
Yeah. Listen, what we are seeing from this president time and time again is he doesn't even do the weave anymore. He's so defensive, to Bill's point, when he was asked this week while leaving for China about the ballooning budget of the big, beautiful ballroom that he assured Americans was going to be paid for by private industry. And next week, it looks like Republicans are going to have to vote to approve $1 billion of our money to pay for. And he starts yelling at the reporter who asks him about the budget doubling. And he goes, what a dumb question. You're a dumb person. I doubled the size of it. And it's like, what happened to the weave, man? You used to be able to talk your way out of anything. And so like, whether it's the defensiveness, whether it is the appearing to not off in more meetings, whether it is going to like summits about nothing, whether it is looking pretty weak on the world stage vis-a-vis Iran, this is a presidency in decline. You are seeing that in his political standing. And the question now becomes, what's the floor? Right? When he finally was in the high 30s, be like, okay, it's done now. Now he's going to be in the low 30s. Could he go as low as Richard Nixon in the wake of Watergate was at 25%? That's the lowest, like Gallup. I know Gallup doesn't do it anymore, but like, this is a presidency in free fall.
Bill?
I think it's a presidency in ascension. We're going to work our way through this summer. I'm an optimist. I feel good things coming. The redistricting wars have gone the Republicans' way, which I didn't expect. So, you know, I feel pretty good about where we're at 172 days from the general.
Okay.
All right, that's too big. You know what? Big to get into.
I love that Bill's an optimist.
We're going to talk about
one of my favorite things
ascension.
About him. Yeah,
actually, we're
ascending.
We're going to talk. We're going to talk about redistricting in the next segment. It's a nice segue that Bill sort of led us into. All right, we have a lot more to get to, including say something nice, which I always appreciate, and I've got a great one today. And it's not going to surprise anybody who listened to the show yesterday. And then Kristen's got a good one as well. And then we got, of course, grab bag. You never know where that's going to go. We're going to break for news. Stick around.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Welcome back to the last half hour with Joe Zepecki and Bill McCoshin. I am Kristen Bry. Steve Scafidi, as always, is here. And let's talk some...
Let's hear about the ascension.
The ascension, yeah. The topic that drives me... It just gets me the angriest as far as our race to the bottom when it comes to politicians picking their voters. But what is the redistricting scorecard right now, Bill?
It looks like after Louisiana and South Carolina and Alabama finish adding one each, that it'll be GOP plus 10. But it could end up being 12 or 13 before this cycle is over. And the truth is it gets better for Republicans in 28 when Georgia does it, and it gets better for Republicans after the new census in 2031. So it's, the long-term projection is potentially a House with a minimum number of 235 Republicans. So the redistricting war, whether New York started it or Texas started it, the GOP is ending it, and they're winning this round, which is keeps them in play for maintaining the House this year.
It's such a weird thing to cheer for.
I don't think he's cheering for it. I'll defend my friend Bill here. If he'll let you.
All right. Destruction? Is that what you said, Bill? Sorry, we're talking about each
other.
No,
we are definitely in that. Yeah.
I don't think Bill is cheering for this. I think he is trying to find a sliver on which he can hinge his trademark optimism. I'm here to provide him with a dose of reality, which is that for this fall, this isn't enough. They can't rig enough seats because when you look at 2018, which is the most comparable midterm, Bill, do you remember how many seats Democrats won?
40.
Yeah, it was a pickup of 40. It was the best showing since the Watergate midterm, 1974. And here's something that Charles Franklin pointed out last week. I don't think we talked about it on Friday. Trump got trounced in those midterms, despite the fact that the economy was good and the Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index was at an all-time high of 97.5. That Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey is now at an all-time low. And Trump is president. We know that he's had problems transferring his coalition when he's not on the ballot. So even with lines that are tougher for Democrats, I believe that Democrats are going to have a very good fall. You can't gerrymander yourself out of a wave of this proportion when you have a Democrat, a Republican president who is this unpopular, as I mentioned earlier, is in my view in free fall and is incapable of adjusting. We're less than 6 months out. Gas prices are rising and he is incapable of adapting to meet the moment.
Any of you two, or us four, think that the public, just on the idea of gerrymandering, not all the other stuff that we talk about, healthcare, economy, will punish this administration or Republicans, who are the leaders of all that right now in Congress and Oval Office, for this effort?
I'll be real quick here, and then Bill can jump in. It is motivating to Democrats when Republicans do this stuff, and it is demotivating for Republicans who think, oh, well, great, it's all done. They drew the lines the right way. And that's how you take a wave and turn it into a tsunami.
So I was
I think Virginia changed the dynamic on that, Steve. And I said this last week. I think Indiana would have backfired had they done it in February when they considered it and they decided not to. I think Indiana could do it without any issue today based on what happened in Virginia and the Virginia Supreme Court overturning that. A complete overreach of a map drawn by a nonpartisan commission. I mean, I think Democrats went too far on this. Joe's right. Listen, I'm not going to.
How
I am
are you
going to
say Democrats went too far, Bill? And look, like, say that with
Virginia,
a serious face,
sure.
As far as. But what about Texas? What about every other state that's doing it? How is it just Virginia that went too far?
I think it's Virginia that went too far because they had a map that was drawn by. They have a constitutional provision that doesn't allow this to happen, which is why it failed. And they could have drawn a 9-2 map versus a 10-1 and probably gotten away with it, but they went too far. And I think it changed the dynamic, and it finally put a little bit of fire in Republicans in South Carolina and Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia. They're finally waking up saying, oh, you know what? This game is actually kill or be killed. And they're fighting back. And it's, you know, from a Republican standpoint, do I like any of this? No, I want to repeat that. I do not think mid-decennial redistricting is good in either direction. But here's where we are.
But when it works, hey! All right, we're taking a break. After the break, say something nice. It'll be interesting to see where everybody comes out. I know where I'm going, so.
Sounds like Bill was going to say something nice about me, and Kristen just rolled right through it.
Sorry. Yeah.
All right. We'll move forward. We'll move forward because it is Say Something Nice. So we'll keep it positive. On Point Taken on Friday. You know where we're at. 620 WTMJ.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You keep saying your side is better. It's time to
say something nice
about the other side of the political aisle on Point Taken.
Come on, people now.
Kumbaya with us out there as we say something nice. Bill McCashin, you're on the road on assignment. You go first.
I'm going to give my say something nice to the 10 Assembly Democrats who voted in favor of the tax package this week. Kudos to them. Yes, many of them are in swing seats and it may have been a political vote. But as I said earlier in the show, it was the right political vote for them to take. And frankly, they stood up for their governor who I don't buy that, you know, he and Robin Voss and Devin Lemahue are lame ducks and therefore that this package should be disregarded. I think it's the opposite of that. They had nothing to gain from this personally, yet they did it anyway because they thought it was in taxpayers' interest. So kudos to the 10 Assembly Democrats who voted yes.
All right, Joe Zepecki.
Two, quickly, one more Republican United States Senator joined Rand Paul and Susan Collins in trying to put a war powers check on this administration. Her name is Lisa Murkowski from the great state of Alaska.
Mm.
And then secondly, former Senator Lamar Alexander. Lamar! With the exclamation point. Out with a new book, The Education of a Senator, in which he writes, Trump undermined the United States Constitution and assaulted one of the most hallowed precepts of the American democracy, the peaceful transfer of power. If those actions do not constitute a high crime or misdemeanor, I do not know what does. And anytime any Republican steps up and says that, they will have my respect.
Great.
All right, Kristen Bry, you're a very busy woman, and part of that is interviewing a lot of people, so I know this is where you made that connection.
Because I was off the week that I got to interview this young man, I didn't get to do him as my Say Something Nice a couple weeks back, but Benjamin Rothov, who is the founder and editor-in-chief of the UW Federalist, which is the conservative newspaper at UW-Madison. He volunteered to be interviewed for our documentary, and he was, one, a great interview, two, just an incredibly accomplished young man, has a lot of convictions, which is great. I was incredibly impressed with him, and I'm really happy he decided to be part of the documentary, and certainly my hat's off to him as far as the good fight that he is fighting for conservatives on the campus of UW-Madison.
And just to provide some context, the thing that you're working on is, for folks who are hearing about
a documentary that is looking at how our polarization in the last 15 years has impacted Gen Z when this is basically all they've known.
And as you demonstrated by mentioning Ben, talking to both sides.
Talking to both sides.
And he's a Madison Federalist.
We're going up north next week. We're going to Cameron, Wisconsin.
Good luck
up there.
See
what it's like up there for young people.
All right. Last but not least, mine, not surprising anybody, Missy Hughes. I read this quote yesterday. I'm going to read it again. Last night, Tom Tiffany killed a common sense plan to invest more badly needed resources in our schools and to provide property tax relief to Wisconsin families struggling with high costs. Tiffany was aided and abetted, strong language, by certain self-serving Democratic candidates. Now, this is me talking. Those self-serving Dems she's talking about, I chose the word idiots. I've used it a couple times this week. They chose politics over pain. And I mean those words. And I say them seriously. Everybody remembers that if you're a Democrat, you're going to vote at some point here, hopefully. Not everybody turns out, but I hope you do. Because these are elections, overused term, they're all important. They matter. Get out and vote. Forget about the social media candidates who spend all their time pontificating about everything they're going to do when they get the power. Forget about those idiots. Forget about the carping bagging candidates who pretend to be social justice warriors, but you never see them until it's election time. Vote for somebody who actually understands what politics is supposed to be about. Helping people. Actual action, not words. Not what you're going to do, but what you have the chance to do today with your vote. So stop the pretending, stop play acting, stop being all worked up because the governor, I'm not asking for a rebuttal on this.
I'm asking a question, a clarifying question. Do you include Tom Tiffany in those you're referring to as idiots?
Yes, I've said over and over again all the week, he should have stayed out of this.
Okay. Just want to make sure you weren't only calling the Democrats who opposed it.
They're strong words. Here's my final thing. If I'm a Democrat and I'm not, vote for Missy Hughes. That's a leader. That's not pretending to be a leader or being a social media warrior. Give me a freaking break.
All right. Since we got most of the politics out of our systems, let's finish up with some grab bags.
If you're listening yesterday for the grab bag, I mentioned this individual with Jeremy, Dr. William Finlayson. Passed away at the age of 101. He delivered 10,000 babies in the Milwaukee area. Civil rights leader. And oh, by the way, also founded the first black-owned bank in Milwaukee. You talk about a life well-lived. That's a dude getting it done. And I just asked myself this question when I was thinking about all the things he achieved. Like, how many of the babies went on to do amazing things, wrote books, went to school, created businesses, had unbelievable families? 4 decades of this stuff. I have so much mad respect for that. That's my grab bag.
That is a life well lived.
All right, Joe, what's your grab bag?
We talked about this on the text thread, you, Bill, and I, not Steve. He opted out. A very concerning thing happened recently, which is the top 1% of American taxpayers, earners, however you want to describe it, now hold more wealth than the entire middle class in the United States. That is, as Bill and I and you all agree, that is not sustainable. It is not good. When you look at this chart, and maybe you could put it in the newsletter this mm-hmm. weekend, when you look at the distance that, or the difference since the 1990s and those boom times to now, we got to figure out some long-term solutions here because this is not sustainable.
Kristen actually mentioned this to me the other day.
I did.
In our pre-show, yeah.
I think we got an email about it, too.
Yeah, it's not right. This is basically the answer.
There's actually, I found an Atlantic article I'm going to put in my recommendation this week as far as, like, what does it actually look like to have policies that would adjust for that? My turn? No, let's go, Bill.
All right, Bill McCashin.
So my message is for Republicans attending the state convention this weekend in Wisconsin Dells, and I may stop there tomorrow on my way back from Minneapolis.
Hey, can you say VIP?
He's going to have to sign his NDA to get in the door.
Focused. Yeah, right? Stay focused. It isn't about the failure or underperformance of our chairman or our executive committee. This weekend is about Tom Tiffany. Get the job done, endorse him so he has access to the Walker loophole, which is a fundraising mechanism, which could give Tom an extreme advantage over the next 88 days between now and the primary while Democrats are fighting it out. Do not get distracted. I love the young energy in our party, but some of those young people don't see the big picture. Any vote of no confidence on the floor on Saturday is a gigantic distraction from Tom Tiffany's coronation.
You don't think that's is that, that's not realistic?
That you're,
is it?
You're putting that signal out?
Yeah, I think it might happen.
Oh wow, that's some breaking news. I didn't think that would happen. Okay.
All right, mine is a personal one. I know we joke about how busy I am, but credit to my sister-in-law, Melissa Sampson, who this weekend is graduating with her MBA from Whitewater. And she works full-time. She's a single mom of a daughter who's 8. And when she started her MBA, she was working for a company that was paying for it. And then when she left that company and now she works for SAS's, you know, we all kind of were like, hey, it's not that big of a deal. Like, you can just do it one class at a time. Like, you don't have to sprint to finish. You're paying for it out of your own pocket now. But she was committed to doing it and to finishing it as an example to her daughter. And she did. And she's done. She walks tomorrow. We have a party for her tomorrow. And I'm just so proud of how committed she was.
That's awesome.
How much effort she put into this. How much she does on her own. Because she's not always good at asking for help, but I am incredibly proud of her, and I'm very excited to celebrate her tomorrow.
God, what a great example is Seth.
Yeah, she's really sure. Great.
All right, real quick response. Anyone see the Packers schedule? Any quick response?
I did.
Yeah, what do you think, Bill?
I don't like all the night games.
Old man say what?
Right? You cranky old man? No, yeah. I don't like all the night games.
Thursday night games, two of them.
And a Wednesday night game. I don't like that one.
I mean, it's the price of being a good team. People want to see you play in prime time.
I tell you what, if you want to invest in a business this year in Wisconsin, invest in a bar because they're going to make a lot of money that night before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, there's only a couple noon games.
Or invest in a shuttle.
Yeah.
As far as getting people up and back to those night games.
There you go.
All right. As we celebrate the week in politics, I often do this with some of our contributors during the week. Real quick, what do you think is going to happen? What's the next week's story in politics? I know I'm surprising you. Think about it, Bill.
I think this Iran stuff is here to stay, and Trump is increasingly feeling that pressure because it's more likely that gas prices jump up again next week than that they stay the same or start to work their way back down. So whether it's the gas tax, there is also the big reconciliation on ICE and DHS next week.
All right, Bill, real quick.
My forecast is you will hear, maybe not next week, but in the next few weeks, that this deal in the legislature is not dead and may come back.
Wow! Bill McCaution. Oh, you saved it.
Well, changes would have to be in it.
Real quick.
I can't go that far. I've gone out on a limb on this show before.
We got the meat. Bill McCaution, safe travels. Joe Zepecki, we'll see you next week. Kristen is going to stick around. We have Salute to Service. We're presenting all of our honorees from last year, which today is Ryan McManaman, a firefighter, and I think it was Lieutenant Ben Baus. Unbelievable story. We'll share that with you. We got Week in Review. Thanks for joining us on this Friday. Busy, busy show. And as we've done all this week, we're celebrating Salute to Service. Thanks to our great partners and sponsors. Waterstone Bank, who's been there for many years, and now Mission 94 joining us. And some other ones that we'll mention next week, some great restaurants providing gifts for our honorees. So we always do before Heroes Week, which is next week when we'll lay out the five newest honorees for 2026. We always celebrate the 2025s, and this one's a great one. Comes from, no surprise, Milwaukee Fire Department. Chief Lipsky nominated these two men. It was one of the, I think it was the only, one of maybe one or two twofers we've ever done. So that was unique. The names are Ryan McManaman, firefighter from MFD, and Lieutenant Ben Baus. Give it a listen.
Hello, I'm Chief Aaron Lipsky, Milwaukee Fire Department. I am nominating Lieutenant Ben Baus and firefighter Ryan McManaman. April 14, 2024, right around 5 in the morning, report of a house fire on South 8th Street. Companies responded in. They found one house very well involved in fire that appeared to be vacant. That fire quickly spread to a house to the north and a house to the south. We were able to quickly evacuate people in the house to the north. However, there were some folks that had trouble getting out on the house to the south.
Me and Captain Leshinsky were tasked with going into that house to get all the occupants out of that house.
They removed one individual off the first floor.
I started to walk him out. Side. He said that his wife, who was disabled, was on the second floor, and Captain Leshinsky said that he was going to start to make his way up there and start to work to get her out.
At this point, the building is starting to clearly be attacked by the fire from next door.
The conditions were not in our favor.
What folks might not understand is when we arrive and now there's three buildings involved, we're outmatched right off the bat.
Captain Leschinski was having issues getting the patient out. He ended up falling down a flight of stairs, trying to maneuver her out and around stuff that was piled on the stairs. I started to go up, and I almost had hands on the patient, and they both started screaming, "We gotta go, we gotta go." As I started coming back down the stairs, I noticed that I had fire coming up above me in the stairwell, and I was able to basically retreat to the front of the house on the second floor. The window that was there was boarded up, and due to the burns that I had sustained on the first floor, I didn't have much dexterity with my hands, and I was able to call for help.
I was in radio communication with them leading up to the event. What Ryan did on that day was nothing short of incredible.
It was the relying on the training that I've gotten to be able to react that I think was what truly saved my life.
Ryan's ability to remain calm, answer questions on the radio, lead us to him, gave him his best chance of survival, allowed us to execute a rescue and help him out. And once I got to him, it was just a huge sigh of relief to see him. There's a lot of other firefighters on this job that could have been put in this position. This may not work out the same way.
I was transported to St. Mary's Hospital. They said that I had 23% burns. I had three surgeries for skin grafts. I spent 27 days at St. Mary's Burn Unit and had phenomenal care from the staff there. They were amazingly wonderful. My family, my girlfriend, both of our families jumped in and helped out every day. But the fire department was, I had probably more visitors than the rest of the hospital. It seemed like every day there was probably 30 to 40 people that were coming up. That attitude that they brought was contagious.
About 8 months after his injuries, Ryan McMenamin returned to full duty. He's back on the south side, aboard Engine 23. Ryan, thank you so much for your dedication, for your heroics and your service. Ryan, please stand and be congratulated. Thank you, Ryan.
What does Salute to Service mean to you?
It means a lot. I'm very honored. I stood several years ago and put my hand up and said that this was the job that I was going to do and people shouldn't expect anything less. So I'm very honored. I think it's a great thing to recognize people and really kind of show people that go above and beyond. And Chief Lipsky and Lieutenant Bowes, I think, are examples of that.
And Bowes, what does Salute to Service mean to you?
Well, it's truly an honor to be sitting here, but to me, this is truly a representation for really our company. It's a privilege to work on Rescue One. It's an honor and privilege to work with the men and women I get to work with, and the way that they showed out and worked on this day, it's just an honor to be a part of it.
It's been 1 week since you looked at me.
A school board oversteps, beagles arrive in Waukesha, a bipartisan deal collapses, and more. It's the Week in Review, brought to you by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
What we do here is go
freak, freak, freak.
Fly ball center field, it's hit well, Grisham back, it is gone! Another Mother's Day miracle for the Brewers!
Pretty young star over there for sure.
Now back in the U.S., all of the Americans aboard the cruise ship where hantavirus was confirmed.
Taken straight to the National Quarantine Center at the University of Nebraska to be evaluated.
President said, the real deal gold at Doral in Miami, put there by great American patriots. It was blessed by Pastor Mark Burns. Gold effigy or not?
Have you watched The Boys?
No.
Creator Eric Kripke, the caption was, seriously, what the F?
As the draft lottery was being conducted, this story broke. Bucks co-owner Wes Edens was identified as the victim of a massive $1.2 billion blackmail and sextortion scheme.
Are we really all getting a check?
It appears so, at least from what leaders are saying. Republicans who control the legislature, the governor, you don't announce something unless you're pretty darn confident the votes are there to pass. So we'll say that.
School districts, they're going to be happy about some of these things are coming back to them.
Yeah, it's just a short-term solution. We've normalized these tiny little crumbs that we get. And it's
incrementalism?
Like, yeah.
All right, now we entered the point in the show where Gina controls the rundowns, and it says Starbucks summer menu launches today. Oh, so you do a mobile order, but then you put in the time you're going to arrive to get it?
Yeah.
My concern is that we would forget.
Oh, I wouldn't forget.
Well, we have you. That's a very good point.
Julia, the beagles have arrived at the Humane Animal Welfare Society Haws in Waukesha.
Some of them are already out and about on leashes, just seeing what's up, and some of them are a little more timid. It kind of varies from dog to dog. The puppies, however, all of them are super energetic.
President Trump arriving in China for his high-stakes summit with President Xi Jinping. Overshadowing the summit, the war in Iran.
And keep in mind, Iran is the sideshow as far as the Chinese are concerned. It's all about the economy.
We should not be training little liberals.
Music doesn't make you gay. What they think is protecting kids is just close-minded bigotry.
The politicization of school boards, I know some parents think this is a win. It's not a win.
The search is on for a new president of the University of Wisconsin system. It's a 25-person committee. I am happy to step in as an alternate.
No pressure.
I'll keep that in mind, but I'll move you up on the list just in case.
Thank you very much.
In Madison, they're trying to sort out whether we will get those rebate checks and whether or not schools will get more funding. And it's not clear if there are the votes for this thing to pass in the assembly.
A few moments later.
There are 15 ayes and 18 noes. The bill is not concurred in.
What happened?
It didn't work, and all 15 Democrats held strong, voting against the plan and taking shots at their Democratic governor in the process.
I'm generally perceived as a pretty nice, calm interviewer. I'm not going to be so nice because I'm pissed off about this. Be prepared to answer the questions because you basically played the politics game.
You hear the word data center? People kind of tend to want to freak out a little bit.
Equating this project in the city to other projects in terms of just using data center as a blanket term, very different scenarios between those two.
Packers prime time.
The Packers begin the season on the road against the division rival Vikings.
There's not like a murderer's row of, oh my God, there's two or three road games in a row, or holy cats, there's going to be tough games.
What a week, eh?
What a week.
I got big visions for my bird.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
That's the Week in Review, brought to you by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Text WEEK, W-E-E-K, to Siding Unlimited. Talk and text line at 855-616-1620 to hear it again.
All right, as we wind it up for another Friday show, Kristen and Steve on Point Taken. We got a lot of things going on. We have events. We'll tell you about those in a second. But we do a newsletter. It comes out Sunday morning.
I got to work on it this afternoon.
Yeah, I saw you working on it. Yes, and you're going to be doing some more this afternoon. It's sort of a look at what we talked about, some of the things that are on our minds, some of the sources that we use, some of the recommendations, events that we're going to do. We'll
get our survey this week is going to be about what happened this week at the Capitol. So if you have strong feelings about that, this is your chance to sound off.
And we actually read all the, because I think there was a ton of them this week, the feedback comments.
Yeah, because in the survey, there's always an option to leave additional thoughts on the topic.
And then we include them.
Yep, and then we pick three different responses and put them in the newsletter.
So, Kristen, how do they find our newsletter?
You text EXTRA to 855-616-1620, and super easy to sign up, super easy to forward to a friend so they can sign up.
So somebody asked me the other day, whatever happened to Ask Us Anything? Well, we just moved it, and we sort of reformatted the idea, so you can still ask us questions. We just don't do it on Wednesdays. We actually have created a whole new platform, sort of, in our podcast environment, digital world, as they say, upstairs here at GKB. And the simple way to get your question to us is just text the word ASK.
Yep, you can text ASK to 855-616-1620. We'll send you that link. That's also in the newsletter. So lots of ways to engage with us.
Yes.
We're very accessible.
Because we've got plenty of time. We do a lot of events. I'm actually be talking about something I'm going to be doing for the Department of Transportation in a week or so. But you have a very big event coming up, so let's give that some love.
So, yes, we had Carmen Petrie on this week.
Who's awesome, by the way.
So if you have any thoughts about wanting to go to Be the Light on June 11th at Discovery World, as of yesterday, there was 36 tickets left.
Whew, not many.
But you have to register by May 20th, so there's only five more days to register. If you are a business owner and you have something you would like to donate to our silent auction, please send me an email, kberey@goodkarmabrands.com. We are still accepting things that can be auctioned off. I was working on that actually at commercial, trying to get some brandy donated from a certain someone for the bottle pull.
Very nice. And as I said to Carmen, Carmen Petrie, when she was here, it's like a standout organization. They're so good. They've been doing it for so long. The need never goes away, which is sort of a sad part of the story, men and women. And it's sort of a direct way that you can really feel like you're getting involved in solutions, helping men and women deal with, you know,
live in safety.
Yeah. I mean, It is a sad thing.
It's been an incredible thing to be a part of. And I, you know, I just live in awe of Carmen and everything that she does and everything that she's, the resiliency she has to continue doing this work that I think can be really draining.
Yeah. This gets thrown around a lot, but she's just a tremendous human being. And she's like doing great work. And she's very passionate about what she does. All right. So as we get ready to go into the weekend, next week is a big week here on our show, NWTMJ. It's Heroes Week. It all has to do with the salute to service, thanks to Waterstone Bank, who's been with me for years doing this, and Mission 94, and some of the Packing House, Botanas, probably leaving some of this, the Aaron Waters Show, all sort of stepping up for five this year, because we had six last year, five individuals who do great jobs every day. They're first responders. And it's a weird mix this year. I think it's three firefighters and two police officers, if I'm correct. Don't quote me on it. And we'll tell their stories every day next week, 11:30. They come in. One of the groups is like eight people. So it's going to be interesting. Family, and it's a celebration of a great story and a great person. We're going to share those stories with you. I got to give a shout out to producer Jazz. She has done a tremendous job gathering all the interviews, because all this week we've been interviewing.
I know, you've been busy this week.
Yeah.
You've had a week like my average week.
Yeah, your average week, my not average week. And for all, anyone who I got mad at, or including Kristen, grouchy, that's the main reason. Jazz, I apologize. I'm not that person. Although I am passionate. Joe is questioning me on my passion.
That was the angriest say something nice I think we've ever had.
I think it had to be said. Don't get me fired up again on that issue. And by the way, I'll back it up again. Missy Hughes, I can't see the
you bad. You want her on the show?
She's always welcome.
Okay.
Because she's a doer, not a yacker.
Do you want any of the people who were against the bill on the show?
Sure. I don't discriminate. But you better be prepared to defend your position.
Well, we have. And not with Tom Tiffany in 2 weeks?
Yes.
Okay. As long as he doesn't cancel?
Yeah. He's not going to cancel. He had to postpone because something came up. But he'll be there for us. I was talking about something. Oh, yeah. So next week, 11:30, we'll present the stories. They're always amazing. And they're in studio, which is just the coolest thing. And as you heard all this week, the reason I do this, somebody asked, is because I want the individuals who do the work, people to understand they're real people. They have real lives. They do amazing work. One of them is a volunteer who also has a full-time job. Pretty cool. Pretty cool story. So,
well, I think it's also your attachment to everything that happened in 2012. Absolutely. Right? As far as how closely you worked with first responders and acknowledging the work that they do, especially in crisis.
Yeah. It changed my life. And I want to make sure we recognize those folks. So it was a great week of shows. Good energy, fun. You guys are awesome. A lot of texts, which keep them coming. We love that. We'll do it again Monday.
Monday.
She's Kristen. I'm Steve. This is Point Taken. Remember that name. See ya.